customer service and competitive prices. Ronnie Hicks, owner and operator of Champion Paving, only uses the highest quality materials to ensure your job is done the right way. Champion Paving serves both residential and commercial clients. Call today for your free estimate, 828-297-5400, or click our logo at goblueridge.net.
Leviticus 25, verse number 10, says, proclaim liberty throughout all. Leviticus 25, verse number 10, says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. And I want to thank you for listening in today. We do appreciate the opportunity to be here on the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. And what a opportunity we have, and we thank the Lord for that. We appreciate our radio stations. We're on WATA right here in Boone, North Carolina, and then 690 AM in Bristol, Virginia, and then 89.1 FM The Truth in Watertown, South Dakota. We want to welcome all of our listeners. We hope you're a regular listener, and we do have many that let us know from week to week that they listen in, and we appreciate that. And then if you are a new listener, we're glad you're with us today. We hope you will stay with us for the next 30 minutes or so. And we're talking about the wonderful message of liberty. I want to make a special announcement before I get started today. And I want to let you know that at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, we're having special services coming up. Evangelist Dr. Ben Carper is going to be with us. And that's going to be this coming Sunday, March the 16th through Wednesday night, March 17th. Now, Brother Carper, you may have heard him on the Bright Spot Hour, and he has been with us the past 2 years. I believe this is the third year that Brother Carper's come to be with us in the month of March. And so we'd love for you to come out and be with us in the services. He's going to be with us Sunday morning, March the 16th at 11 a.m. And then we're going to have a short break. We're going to have a meal there in the fellowship hall, and we're going to come back in at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And we'll have our afternoon service. There'll be no service on that Sunday night. That'll be our second service. And so we'd love for you to come be with us in the 2 p.m. on this Sunday. And then Monday through Wednesday night at 7 p.m., we'll be starting nightly. And so come and be with us. If you need directions, I'm going to give you the church website, MountLebanonBC.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org. And I'll give you the church phone number, 828-963-4596. 828-963-4596. We're located just a few miles outside of Boone, North Carolina, on Highway 105 South. And then you take Baird's Creek Road, 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road, just above the Willow Creek Golf Course, is where the church is located. So I wanted to let you know about that special service or services coming up as we get started today. But we're talking about the message of liberty. And we never run out of material talking about the subject of liberty. The message of liberty is central to the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. The gospel message is one of liberty. It's one of freedom. Jesus said in John 8:36, "If the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed." And if you read in the Gospel of Luke, when the Lord Jesus Christ started his public ministry at the age of 30 years old, the first message that he ever preached was out of Isaiah chapter number 61, verses 1 through 3. And the Bible says in the book of Luke chapter 4 that he went into the synagogue and stood up to read. And the place that he read was out of the prophet Isaiah's. And he read from where the Bible says that he came to proclaim liberty to the captives. And so liberty is central to the message of the gospel. And it is also central to the message of America. Have you ever considered that America has, or it might sadly be had, a message? But America has a message. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Philip Nicholas concerning the Constitution, said this: "May you and your contemporaries preserve and violate the Constitution, which, cherished in all its chastity and purity, will prove in the end a blessing to all the nations of the earth." Now, the key to the Constitution being a blessing to all the nations of the earth is what he said in the two words, preserve, inviolate. Inviolate, that word, it means this: to preserve the Constitution unhurt, uninjured, unpolluted, unbroken. The founding fathers, they warned to preserve, inviolate the Constitution of the United States. Don't let it get broken down. Keep it as it is. Keep it pure. Keep it uninjured, unhurt. You know, the more I study our Constitution, our government, our society as a whole, the more broken that it is. Not appears to be, but is. We are living in a society, a country, a nation that is falling apart all round about us. Isn't that sad? Now, you may not hear that on the news, but you look around in the world, you see things that are going on, you see the direction that we're going on. Our nation is falling apart around about us, and how sad that is. Psalms chapter 11, verse number 3 says, "If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" And a couple of years ago, we did a study. It took about 26, 32 weeks, somewhere around in there, talking about our founding principles. Our founding principles of our nation versus how it is now. And we found out that most of these founding principles, these pillars, have already been destroyed, or they are in a state of disrepair right now. How long can a building go and you tear the foundation and the pillars out of it and it still continue to stand? It cannot stand and be what it was. It'll fall. It'll have to be made into something else. That is what is going on right now in our nation. Our nation is being made into something else. George Washington, in his farewell address to the nation, he made the observation that our Constitution was for a moral and a religious people, that it was unsuitable for any other. This is why other nations cannot take our Constitution and make it apply. Our way of government, our way of life, cannot be transferred to Egypt or Libya or Syria or some country that does not have a people like our people, like our nation was when the nation was founded. Our Constitution is for a moral and a religious people. And when they were talking about religious or religion, our founding fathers, they weren't talking about just any religion, but they were talking specifically about Judeo-Christian Bible believers, people who followed the Bible, the God of the Bible. That's what they were talking about. George Washington said this in his farewell address. He said, "And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. It is a false teaching. It is a false supposition to think that we can maintain morals without religion. You just cannot do that. And we're in trouble as a nation. We're in trouble morally speaking, spiritually speaking, physically, that's physically with a F, economically speaking, and also physically with a P, P-H-Y. We're just in trouble all around. Governmentally, if that's a word, if not, I just made it up. But governmentally speaking, our nation is in trouble. Well, we have been studying the Constitution, the United States Constitution. And there's more and more awareness that we've gotten far, far away from this, and we need to get back to the Constitution. Well, how can we get back to it if we don't know what it says? So we've been talking about the United States Constitution bringing out examples. We hear much. If you begin to study about the history of our nation, you'll hear about, just if you say anything about government in a Bible verse or say something that somebody said, religiously speaking, you'll hear, well, separation of church and state. You'll hear that the Constitution is a secular document, that it has nothing to do with the Bible, nothing to do with God whatsoever. You will hear, you will be led to believe, if you just study history from a secular viewpoint, you will be led to believe that our founding fathers were just a bunch of unbelieving deists that didn't believe the Bible, didn't want anything to do with Jesus Christ or the church or the Bible or anything like that. But I found something a while back in reading the Constitution, and I got such a blessing out of it. I thought I'd share it with you today because we have this influence that wants to make people think that, boy, these founding fathers, they were just a step away from a bunch of infidels. But I was reading the Constitution. I found something in Article Number 1, Section Number 7, and it's really pretty boring reading. I mean, it's not something you're going to jump up and shout about, but it's talking about the business of the government, specifically the House of Representatives. And there's two little words in there that just jumped out to me. They're actually in parentheses in the text. And it just says this, talking about the business of the government and waiting so many days for something to take place. These two words in parentheses says this, Sundays excepted. So every day except Sunday is what that's talking about. Just two little words in the Constitution that they cared enough to put in there, Sundays excepted. What they were saying, no business was to be conducted on Sundays. And I thought to myself, well, that's interesting. That's odd that they would put that in there. Why would they make an exception for Sundays? And I'll tell you why they made an exception for Sundays. Because most of them went to church. They observed the Lord's Day. It was important enough to them and the society that they were in that they would observe the Lord's Day, which sometimes is referred to as the Christian Sabbath. Now, Saturday is the Jewish Sabbath. That is technically, when you read in the Bible, the Sabbath day is Saturday. But in the New Testament, the early Christians, they begin to worship on the first day of the week, which if you look at a calendar, it's not Monday, it's Sunday. And so that, look, I got a blessing out of that. Sundays excepted. It reminds us that even those in the highest positions of leadership in our country, they observed, they respected the Lord's Day, which is Sunday. Well, we're looking at the Constitution. This is the Constitution, Part Number 7. And so far, we've seen several things about the Constitution. We've been looking at the different groups that are mentioned in the Constitution. So far, we have seen we the people are very important. In fact, they are the most important. Our government is to be by the people, for the people. So we the people, they're the first ones that's mentioned in the preamble to the Constitution. We the people of the United States. And so we've seen we the people. We see the militia was mentioned several times in the Constitution. The militia was existent at the time. It predates the army and the navy. The militia is existent apart from Congress, the president, the Supreme Court. The militia is the armed citizenry. That's what the militia is. And under no circumstances whatsoever shall the right of the people to keep and bear arms be infringed. That is a deterrent against a tyrannical government. We see in our government right now, states like Colorado, California, Connecticut, especially. Connecticut could just be a mess. They're telling lawful gun owners that they need to turn in their guns. They need to turn in their, and there's thousands and thousands of people that are saying, we're not going to obey. We will not comply. Now, you're not seeing this in the news because, you know, that needs to be rainbows and flowers and all kind and good things. And you don't get the real picture just watching the news. But we've looked at the militia. We've looked at the states. And we've looked at the United States. The states are all the states individually. The Constitution guarantees each state a Republican form of government. And then we looked at the United States last week, and we have three to go. We have Congress, the President, and the Supreme Court. And then the following weeks, that's what we're going to look at, the Congress, the President, and the Supreme Court. Last week, we said this, that the United States, now, when you think about the United States, that is we the people. That is the heart of our nation, is that we would be, as we say in the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God. And we pledge allegiance to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. You're familiar with all of that, the United States. That's the heart of our nation, the mind and the body that carries out what we do together as a people. We come under the banner of the United States. That is the federal government. This is how we get things done together as a people, no matter what that might be. We went over several things last week talking about that. But the federal government is specifically the body. For example, at the time of the adoption of the United States Constitution, the individual states, there was a lot of conflict about who owned the land. You know, the West of the 13 colonies had not been claimed. It was very sparsely inhabited, and different states had already looked west and they had laid claim to different lands across the Appalachian Mountains and into the western part of the what would become the United States. And states were fighting in between themselves over this land. And one of the compromises that was made in order to ratify the Constitution is that each individual state would turn over its claim to the new land to the United States so they could sign and ratify the Constitution of the United States. Now, when they turned over their claim to that land to the United States, who did that go to? That went to Congress, and Congress decided how the land would be divided up. So the United States has to have a body to work through, or nothing could ever get done. And so we seen that last week and talked about it just a little bit. But the Constitution gave us our present form of the federal government. Now, when we talk about the federal government that we have, there are three branches to our federal government. These are the last three that we're going to look at in studying about the Constitution. And I remember learning these things in school, and I'm sure that many of you learned these things as well. But there are three branches in our federal government. There's the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. The legislative branch is made up of Congress. You have two sides to Congress. You have the Senate and you have the congressman or the House of Representatives. So you have the Congress, the legislative branch. Then in the executive, that's the president and the vice president's what it's talking about. Then in the judicial, you have the Supreme Court. And all of these are talked about, and they each have their responsibilities outlined in the Constitution. Now, there's two things I want to point out today. Our time will quickly get gone. There's two things I want you to know about the legislative and the executive branch of our government. The legislative, first of all, the Congress we're talking about. Article 1, Section number 8. And I've talked quite a bit about Section number 8, which just outlines what Congress is supposed to do. In fact, Section 8 begins and it says, "The Congress shall have power to." And it goes on down. There's two pages. It talks about the power that Congress has and what they're supposed to do. Article 1, Section 8. The last paragraph says this about Congress. Congress shall have power to, and here's what the last paragraph says, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. And so what is Congress supposed to do? This might be what they are most well known for, is the making of laws. Now there comes a point where surely we've got enough laws. I mean, I think they're living up to their name when we're talking about lawmaking. Every year, thousands more laws goes onto the books. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. They are to make, and here's what the Constitution says specifically, to make all laws. That is why it is called the legislative branch. That's why congressmen are also called lawmakers. Well, that's what they do. That's what the Constitution says. Now, we're not going to talk about or get into what's good law, what's bad law. That's what they do. They make laws. Now, we go on over to the executive. The executive is talking about the president. And I want to say some things about the president and what the Constitution says concerning his power and his responsibility. Article 1 deals with Congress. Article 2 deals with the executive power. And Article 2, Section 1 says the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. Now, there's some things about the president in Article 2 that we need to make sure that are put into place. For example, it gives the age limit of the president. Did you realize there's an age limit for the president? He must be at least 35 years old. The president of the United States shall be a natural born citizen. This is Article 2, Section number 1. No person except a natural born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. Now, to be a natural born citizen means this: your mother and your father are to be American citizens. If your mother and father are not American citizens, if one is an American and the other is British, what you find is you have a dual citizenship. Now, our president at present was born a dual citizen. It doesn't matter where he was born. There used to be there's a controversy about which country he was born in. It doesn't matter. If you are not a citizen with American parents as your parents, you're not a natural born citizen. Well, it goes on down. Article 2, Section 1 tells us something else about the office of the president. It said, before he enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. Now, our current president has taken this oath twice. And the oath or the affirmation goes like this: I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully, and that's a good word worth picking out and talking about, I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So he takes an oath to faithfully execute the office of the president. Well, what is the president supposed to do? Article 2, Section number 3 goes on down. It talks about his many responsibilities that he has. And it says, Article 2, Section 3, he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed and shall commission all the officers of the United States. What is he supposed to do? He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. That's why it's called the executive branch. The president is to make sure that the law is executed. What that word execute means, if you look it up in the dictionary, it means literally to follow out or to follow through with something. His responsibility is not to make new laws or ignore those laws that he does not agree with. Now, I have an article with me, and I want to share just a little bit. It's by Judge Andrew Napolitano, and I really like him. He's a great constitutional gentleman, a patriot. I like to read after him. The name of this article, it was in the U.S. Journal, the most recent edition, and the title is Congress Silent While President Dictates. That's the article. That's the title to the article. Now, listen what Judge Napolitano said about the president and Congress. He said, presidential law writing. That's talking about when the president begins to write laws, which the Constitution gives him no authority to do so. Presidential law writing violates the presidential oath of office, steals power from Congress, disrespects an equal branch of the government, and when unchecked, accumulates such power in the executive branch that it effectively transforms the president into a menacing tyrant who rejects his constitutional obligations and limitations. And he gives several examples where the president has been a law unto himself. And we hear this in the news quite often, where the president talks about that he would bypass Congress, where he said this in 2008. He said the biggest problems that we're facing right now have to do with George Bush trying to bring more power into the executive branch and not go through Congress at all. And that's what I intend to reverse when I'm president. Now, Mr. Obama said that in 2008. Do you know what he said in 2014? He said, I've got a pen and a phone. He's done just as bad or worse than George Bush when he was president. But nowhere does the Constitution authorize the president to be a law unto himself. And Mr. Napolitano gives several examples about how Mr. Obama bombed Libya without a declaration of war by Congress, where he has told the 11 million illegal immigrants who are here and subject to deportation that if they comply with a new set of rules, they will not be deported. It talks about the president has used drones to kill Americans. He made up a set of his own secret rules to follow. Congress had nothing to do with this. He talks about the president's agents now acknowledge that they spy on all of us, and on. He gives several examples of this. And he says, and while all of this is going on, Congress largely sits as a potted plant. And so if Congress is not careful and does not step up and do their constitutional duty, well, what do you even need Congress for? They are supposed to write the laws. The president is supposed to execute the laws. He's supposed to make sure that they are carried through with. And I have another article, and I don't just lay awake at night and make this stuff up out of my head. There's several in our nation that are concerned about Congress not doing what it's supposed to do and the president doing what he's not authorized to do, and that's making and changing laws at a whim. I think the Affordable Health Care Act, which was passed into law, whether you agree or not, I think the president on his own accord has changed it some 26, 29 times, somewhere around in there. He has no authorization whatsoever to do those things, yet he does it. He gets away with it, and very few in Congress are raising a voice about that this is not right. I have a article by Charles Kessler. He made a speech at Hillsdale College, and I get this publication. It's called Imprimis. It's real good. Well, anyway, in this speech, Mr. Kessler says this about the Constitution. He says, after a century of progressive mining and sapping of the Constitution, the great document we count on to defend us now needs our defense. And the form of government issuing from the Constitution is itself in need of restoration and renewal. When our nation when our Congress does not do what it's supposed to do, and our president begins to do things he's not authorized to do, what makes our president different from Putin over in Russia or any other dictator that just does what they want to do without regard to their Constitution, their Congress, their elected leaders? I say there is little to no difference. Well, our clock has called us today. We do appreciate you listening in. This is the Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. Have a great day. God bless.
I'm Mike Raley. Unlawful political pressure may have been brought to bear on the Army sexual assault.